accession number 18821, reel 1.
Reg Holbert, reel 1. Where were you born, please?
I was born in Fulham, London.
Which year was this?
1935.
Did you grow up and have your schooling in Fulham?
Yes, I did. After the primary school, I went to what they used to call Fulham Central School, which was one below a grammar school and between a secondary school.
So you were a schoolboy in Fulham in the Second World War?
Yeah, I was.
What was your address in Fulham during the war?
During the war was 120 Coal Hill Lane.
Coal Hill?
Coal Hill Lane, yes.
What was it like being a schoolboy in Fulham then?
Well, quite frightening, of course, because my father was away in the war, and so my mother looked after myself and my brother, and her mother lived with us as well, which was my grandmother. For some reason, we weren't evacuated, as most children seem to have been from London area. I don't really know why we weren't, but looking back on it, I'm glad we weren't. And we had a, I've got to think what it is, Anderson Shelter or Morrison Shelter, I think it is, one that's indoors, sort of under, it's about 3 foot high. And my mother and father's double bed was on top of it. And it was obviously reinforced steel, but the sides were of a wire mesh. Rather like a cage, really. And we used to sort of climb into there every night and sleep in there while the air raids were on.
How many of you were in the Morrison shelter?
Well, there was four of us, me, mother, grandmother, and my brother. It would probably hold six, I think, although I'm thinking about it, maybe not. Yeah, well, two. Yeah, it would probably hold, laying down, it would probably hold six people.
Could you get any sleep during the raids?
Well, you did, but obviously, it varied, didn't it? You know, because depending upon the intensity of the bombing and the raid itself. I always remember before my father went in the army, he was ARP, you know, and he had a printing shop in Fulham. And when I always remember he went out, and the raid was going on, or just gone on, and someone said to him, "It's your factory," which was in Parsons Green, another part of Fulham. And when he went down there, he had blown a railway underground train. But it was on surface, it came out, you know, it was on surface, and it blown it off the rails into the through the roof of his factory. And I always remember going down around there sometime later as a little small boy. I suppose I must have been about 8, I suppose, and I always remember seeing this great underground railway carriage hanging through the roof of his factory over all the printing machines.
What factory was this?
It was only a small printing shop, which his grandfather and my grandfather and my uncles run. It was just called F.S. Holbert and Sons Printers.
So this was a district line tube?
That's right, yeah. But it surfaces between, Elscourt and Wimbledon. It's surface.
And why do you say that you were glad you weren't evacuated?
Well, when I see the films and stories that you see now of evacuees. All right, I know I might have been lucky and found a good billet, but from what I see of the suffering of those, I think I was probably better off with my own parent, with my mother, although, of course, probably in greater danger.
Were the rest of your school friends at school evacuated?
I really can't remember that, because I think I was too young to have sort of close friends as such, you know, being sort of... I was 4 when the war started, so by the time it was really at its height, I was about 7 or 8, I suppose. So, you know, I can't say I missed any friends because of them being evacuated. I can't remember that as such, you know.
You were telling me earlier off the record about a Spitfire that you saw come down. Can you repeat in detail what your memories are of that incident, please?
Oh, yeah. Obviously, I think I must have been sheltered a lot because there was bombing all around, my mother and father. My mother kept me away from it as much as possible, but like all kids, you're inquisitive, and once or twice when I did get out, I remember a Spitfire or talk of a plane coming down a couple of roads away, and I know I went round and I remember seeing the Spitfire sort of come down over the houses and actually crashed into the middle of the road, and I always remember the plane propped up against the houses on one side with its roof, with its tail sort of from the roof down into the road. Then the pilot was obviously killed, and he was laying in the gutter covered up at the time, obviously. But obviously the police were keeping people away, and the civil defence people were keeping people away naturally. But I can't remember to this day whether it was a British Spitfire or a German plane. I just can't remember that. And I remember another time when I was let out. I used to go to Cubs during the war. The minister of the local church used to run a Cub pack for the few people that were around still. And while we were waiting for him to come, you know, boys, we dashed off around a couple more roads where there'd been a bomb dropped. And I remember to this day seeing the amount of rubble that was piled up between the houses that were left standing, where I thought all that rubble went to, I just don't know. But it shook me when I saw it for the very first time, because it's something that's always stayed in my mind, you know.
Coming back to the aircraft, which street, do you remember which street it
came
down?
Yes, Gown Avenue in Fulham.
Any other memories of the bombing? Other incidents?
Yeah, I remember when I think in some ways the most frightening part of the war was probably when the doodle bugs come over. I think they were called V1s. When they used to come over, you hear the engine, and the engine used to shut off, and then it would be, then you knew then it was coming down, and obviously the louder the noise, the nearer the plane was. And once the engine shut off, it used to just dive. It used to, for a while, you know, it used to be a couple of minutes before you would hear the explosion. And I always remember, my mother does too, as she did, one Saturday lunchtime, the air raid siren went, and then even in the day we were going to the shelter. And us being boys, we played her up and we wouldn't get into the shelter, you know. But eventually we did. She got us in there. And this doodle bug came over. And it sounded just as if it was over the top of the house. And the engine cut out. And I can remember to this day, my heart really thumped, you know. And as you're laying in this shelter, I could see the bedroom window of the house, you know, her bedroom window. And as I say, the engine cut out, and then after a few minutes there's an almighty bang, and I saw the windows crack, because we used to have sticky brown tape over them to stop the glass splintering. and I just saw the windows go, and we knew it was near, obviously. But fortunately, it wasn't on our house. And that had dropped in Bishop's Park, which was just over the road from us.
That's an actual park, is it?
Yes, Bishop's Park, yes. Next to the Fulham football ground. Team I supported all my life.
What about the V2s? Did they have a similar terror?
They did, and the only thing, of course, they, you didn't hear those. They were, you know, you just didn't hear those. They just came over. There was no engine on them. I can't remember how they were propelled. But they were silent, so I rather suspect they were something like the modern day missile. I'm not sure though, but I would think so.
So these V weapon attacks were worse for you than the earlier bombing, were they?
I think they were more frightening, because if a plane comes over, you know, you don't hear the bombs necessarily, you may hear a whistle, but these engine, when you could hear the engine, the nearer they got, you knew you were in greater danger. Also, I think by the time the V1s and V2s came along, I was that much older, because that was towards the end of the war. So therefore, you sort of remember that more, and also you realise the danger more than when you're younger.
Did the bombing and the V weapons have any bad psychological effect on you?
No, I don't think so. No, I don't think so, because of course when the war was over, it was a great relief, wasn't there, you know. And I remember the celebrations when the war was over, especially VE Day. And they used to build in those days, for people that didn't have shelters, either in their gardens or like us indoor, they used to build great concrete shelters with bunks in, actually in the roads. Because you've got to remember then, there wasn't that number of cars. And so therefore, actually in the roads, they would build a concrete shelter for the residents of that road to go and sleep in overnight. And I always remember on VE night, there was great celebrations and great bonfires in the streets. And I remember people ripping all the bunks out, all the wooden bunks out, and burning them.
Was there anything laid on for the children in the celebrations?
Oh, yeah. Obviously, weeks later, you know, some weeks later, when things were more official, if you like, there were great street parties where for the children, and dancing for the grown-ups in the evening, mostly in the streets. All the streets were decorated. And of course, that was all the food was sort of, people pulled it because everything was limited and on rations.
Were there many soldiers and other forces around in Fulham during the war?
Not that I can remember in Fulham. I mean, so I mainly remember the Home Guard. Home Guard and ARP, Airway.
Area precautions.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, they're the people I really remember. I always remember my father. Though my father was not fighting; he was always stationed in. He was in the Royal Ordnance Corps. Teleprinter, being his trade. He was a teleprinter down in Oswestry in Wales. But I always remember him coming home, and actually coming home on leave, but coming home with his rifle. Which today just doesn't happen, but it was quite a common thing to have soldiers walking around the street or to and fro with rifle and all their equipment as well.
Was there any trouble from any of the soldiers as they went about in public?
Not that I know of, no.
What was the attitude towards the Germans during the war?
Well, most of the Germans used to go under the name of Hitler, although he's only one man. It was mainly everybody referred to it as Hitler's war, really, from what I can remember, you know. But obviously, they, for a boy of my age, they were the big bad enemy, you know. But I can't say I can remember any specific hostility towards Germans, although there must have been, and obviously by the adults, but I can't say I can remember any.
Did your education suffer because of the war?
Oh yes, I think most people's education suffered because of the war, because we had to, sometimes we weren't there because of air raids, sometimes we were in the air raid shelter during time we should be at lessons, and also we shifted schools several times because of bomb damage. We'd be in one school one time, then we go to another school. It does remind me of when I was one school, we'd gone to a temporary, this was in infants junior school, because obviously at that time, and I do remember being in the playground at one time, and a Spitfire, German Spitfire came over, and everybody, whether the siren had gone or not, I don't know, because occasionally you would get a, from what I can remember, an odd German plane come over and the siren hadn't necessarily gone, or I suppose, thinking back, well, there were times when the siren used to go and nothing would happen, so consequently, nothing would happen in your particular area, and so I suppose, and I'm thinking about, I suppose people got a bit complacent when this happened a few times, and so therefore they wouldn't take so much notice of the siren as they would if it was a regular bombardment. And I do remember, I can't remember why, but we were in the playground with my mother, I think. And I know this plane came over and there was a great scatter, everybody scattered, and he actually machine gunned the playground. Fortunately, no one was hurt. I always remember the bullets.
Which school was that?
That was at Kingwood Road Primary School.
Anybody hit, do you know?
Oh, no, there was no, fortunately there was no.
Now, can you tell me how you came to be in the army yourself, please?
Well, as you know, at that time, everybody at the age of 18 was conscripted for 2 years national service. And I was apprenticed at the time as a compositor. I was 3 years into my apprenticeship. And at that time, you could either defer your army service till you finish your apprenticeship, or you could go into the army and finish your apprenticeship when you came out. Well, I chose, for reasons of the circumstances of where I was being apprenticed and where I was being trained, I chose to go in the army at 18. So therefore, I went for my medical, and I'd always suffered to a certain extent with asthma, and because my mother had asthma. But now looking back, I think a lot of that was down to stress and nerves because of the war. And she, after the war, her asthma did, as she got older, her asthma actually improved. But I could never quite work out whether it was stress or whether it was dust, in my case as well, because I could never sleep on feathers. I used to get a... Anyhow, so when I went for medical, I didn't expect to get past A1, which I did. And I was put into the... And when I was called up for the Irish Fusiliers, when the papers came through, it said, report to Seaforth Barracks for onward dispatch to Northern Ireland. So we went up by train. I met a chap on the train who's been was my best pal right until about 7 years ago when he passed away, unfortunately. But we were together throughout. And we reported to the Seaforth barracks, where they gave us a meal of sausage and mash and a talk by, I believe, an army officer, and also by a padre, who warned us that where we were going, beer would be cheap and women would be loose. By that time, we didn't know where we were going.
Is Seaforth Barracks in Belfast?
No, it's in Liverpool. Liverpool. And that night, we were put onto the boat, still in civilian gear. We were put on the boat and transferred to Belfast. It was almost like a deportation. Quite frightening, really, even though you're a lad of 18, to suddenly find yourself on the boat being shipped away from your own shores, if you like, you know. Although Ireland obviously is all known part of the UK, you don't seem to think that. Anyhow, the next morning, of course, we're all sleeping on benches, and that's standing, you know, there's no berths or anything, it's just seats. And then the next morning, when the ship docked at Belfast, there's the army trucks all lined up along the side with the sergeant majors, with the drill sergeants with their red sashes. And they ordered us off into these trucks. And we were taken to Seaforth Barracks. No, sorry. Seaforth Barracks in Liverpool. Sorry, we were taken to Armagh Barracks. In Armagh itself. And then we'd done our basic training. We knew we were in the army then. And
what was the basic training like?
Pretty tough for kids of that age, you know, 18. It was 10 weeks. Mainly it was a square bashing and some arms, small arms training. And more or less getting you fit. But you were a mixture there, you see, because you've got some people, or certainly the officers, the sergeants, a lot of them were regular, and it was their profession. Whereas you got most of the people got herded in there as conscripts, and I don't think most of them, the last percent of them, didn't want to be there anyhow. But you settled down with it. Some obviously took to it better than others. Like any group of men, though, you always get your rebels, don't you?
Were you a rebel?
No, I wasn't. No, I must admit I wasn't. No. I was too scared to be a rebel.
What happened to the rebels?
Well, they obviously disciplined in the normal. But at the time, it's quite funny because there were some regular soldiers. See, I didn't know much about the Irish history at the time. And I'm talking about this was 1953, when the IRA had been quite quiet for several years. But there were some people in our regiment who come from Southern Ireland. And when they were allowed to go home after 6 weeks for a weekend, whereas we couldn't because we were in England. But they went home. When they went home, of course, they had to go home in civilians because they weren't allowed to go home in the British uniform. And I always used to hear the stories about the black and tans, and this is when I started to learn more about the Irish history. But up until then, as a boy, I hadn't picked any of it up. But then, of course, since, in recent years, we all know the recent troubles in Northern Ireland.
Did you experience any problems yourself in Northern Ireland?
No. The people were very friendly. No problems at all. No, but out of the regiment of... Well, we were only a squad of about 100. Our draft was about 100 people. Most of them came from the London area. But there were a few, as I say, from Southern Ireland who joined us as... They joined as volunteers, and they joined the same... I can't remember what it's called. Draft. Same draft as ours for their basic training.
How did you cope with the basic training yourself?
I didn't like it. Because no matter how good you were, the sergeants tried to, in my opinion, intimidate you. But that's part of the way of it. When you grow up, when you go man, you sort of take it, don't you? But they try to intimidate you. There's no doubt about it. They try to pull your get your rag out. You know, you've seen it all, I'm sure, on the films, and it's quite true the way they portray it.
So once you finished the basic training, you were in which, you went to a battalion?
Yeah, once we finished our basic training, we came back to England from 1 week's leave. That would be December of 1953. We then went back to Ireland in a transit camp in Omagh, and then we went to Berlin, where the battalion was at that time.
Is this the first Royal Irish Fusiliers?
First battalion Royal Irish Fusiliers. And they were in Berlin at the time. I was drafted to A Company, which was a rifle company. And of course, at the time, the bullshit was absolutely at a peak. Because at the time in Berlin, Berlin was divided into four sectors, as you probably know. Russian, American, French, and English. And we were stationed quite near Spandau Prison, where they kept some of the high-ranking German officers. Hess was there, for one. And every month, each country out of the four guarded the prison, and that was a real bullshit job, you know?
In what way was it bullshit?
Oh, absolutely. You know, everything had to be... Everything had to be blankoed, absolutely, you know, the turnout had to be absolutely perfection. A bit like the guards. And also the rest of the life in the battalion was one of folding your of kit inspections and absolute ball, you know. And then... Well, I got a transfer then, because I didn't fancy a rifle company. And I got a transfer into HQ company to train as a regimental signaller. And I just joined HQ company. And gradually then, because we were going to go abroad, well, we were going to go to the Far East, to Korea, the attitude of the... whole setup began to change. The discipline on the bullshit side began to get much slacker. Starting with HQ company to start with, and there was a different attitude. So now I look back on it, I can see it was changing. And the battalion—I was only there for 4.5 months, although the battalion had been in Germany for some 3 years, I think. And then the whole battalion come back to England.
How did you get on with the Berliners?
Oh, they were okay. There was, you know what it's like when you go out for a beer up, you're in someone else's country, and obviously they do resent you to some extent, especially when you get a group of soldiers, if you like, all out, probably not harmless, but having a good time. I never got into any trouble, but I didn't go looking for trouble. But obviously there were some instances of fights and things, but nothing more than a sort of a pub brawl, if you like.
And